Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Hergert. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. Today, we had the pleasure of speaking with Jared Weiss, MD, an associate professor of medicine in the Division of Oncology and Department of Medicine at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine, and associate director of finance at the UNC Lineberger Clinical Protocol Office at UNC Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center, to discuss the FDA approval of trilaciclib in extensive stage small cell lung cancer. On February 12, 2021, the FDA approved trilaciclib to reduce the frequency of chemotherapy-induced bone marrow suppression in adults receiving certain types of chemotherapy for extensive-stage small cell lung cancer. Myelopreservation data from three randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trials served as the basis for the regulatory decision. In each study, the first-in-class investigational therapy was given prior to or in conjunction with chemotherapy in patients with small cell lung cancer. In a pooled analysis of the studies, the administration of the CDK4/6 inhibitor prior to chemotherapy resulted in a significant reduction in most measures of multilineage chemotherapy-induced myelosuppression, as well as the need for supportive care interventions. Overall survival and progression-free survival did not appear to be affected by the addition of trilaciclib, which was consistent with the hypotheses that were generated based on the agent's mechanism of action, Weiss explained. Instead, trilaciclib can offer patients with small cell lung cancer improvement in chemotherapy-induced toxicities and quality of life, said Weiss. In our exclusive interview, Weiss discussed the significance of the FDA approval of trilaciclib in extensive-stage small cell lung cancer and key efficacy and safety data that have been reported with the CDK4/6 inhibitor. What does the approval of trilaciclib mean for the field of small cell lung cancer?
Much as we would all love to see it die sometime, the major treatment for small cell, if not all human cancers, remains chemotherapy. Chemotherapy has many infamous side effects, and amongst them is myelosuppression and its downstream sequelae. Now, culturally, this is an interesting set of toxicities because we've come as oncologists to accept them as part of the cost of doing business, yet they're still a rather notable source of suffering for our patients. So when you look at, for example, neutropenia, neutropenia leads to infections, hospitalizations, and delays in chemotherapy. Anemia does many of the same, leads to fatigue, to shortness of breath, to blood transfusions. And I would highlight fatigue as a particularly important side effect because it's both the one that my patients complain about the most, as well as the one that I'm least able to help them with. And so, you know, we come to a state where we have one of the dominant side effects or classes of side effects for chemo being accepted almost as if it's okay. And that's largely because we didn't have an alternative pretty much until now. Enter trilaciclib. We readdress this conversation now that we can do something about it. And so you're looking here at an agent that performs multi-lineage proactive preservation of the myeloid precursor. So thinking about neutrophils, when neutrophils go low, you get febrile neutropenia. This is actually a rather common problem. In frontline small cell, you're looking at almost a quarter of patients with grade 3-4 neutropenia. With topotecan in late lines, more than half. We can react to it with G-CSF rescue, but that causes a lot of bone pain. And there's a literature showing that the annualized cost of these severe events is actually rather high, that the annualized cost per patient with grade 3-4 events is $131,000. Same is true of anemia, very similar data set, 14% grade 3-4 rates in frontline, 31% with topotecan in late line. Theoretically, you can use ESAs. I don't know anyone actually doing that with their black box warnings, but we do have transfusions with their own sets of problems, including expense. And of course, thrombocytopenia really not leading to a lot of bleeding, but certainly leading to plenty of dose delays. So with this large unmet need that I've described to you and an agent that can actually address this unmet need, in my opinion, trilaciclib is now a standard of care when patients receive carboplatin or carboplatin and atezolizumab in frontline, and when they receive topotecan in later line.
Could you discuss the mechanism of action of trilaciclib and really the rationale to evaluate it in small cell lung cancer?
In addressing the mechanism of action of trilaciclib, it's helpful to remind ourselves about something we haven't spoken of in a while, which is the mechanism of action of chemo. When I was a fellow, we memorized where in the cell cycle and how each of these chemotherapeutic agents worked as if they were fundamentally different from each other. Now, in an era with immunotherapy and targeted therapy, we think of them perhaps as a little bit more similar, and I can't remember in recent years ever talking to a fellow about this. But what does chemo do? Chemo is poison. More specifically, it's a poison that works by poisoning cells while they're in cycle, while they're dividing. And when we think about the dominant agents used against small cell, which is to say platinum agents, these poison cancer cells when they're in the S phase of the cell cycle. Now, in explaining chemo to patients, I often comment on the idea that the chemo is semi-selective for cancer cells over healthy cells because most of the healthy cells in the human body stay put, do their job, and never divide. They don't enter the cell cycle, where cancer cells are constantly doing that in order to divide, grow, and cause their cancer evil. Well, one of the exceptions to this rule, one of the healthy cells in the adult human body that does divide are the bone marrow progenitors to make new blood cells. And so trilaciclib does, it's actually in the name of the company that makes it, G1 Therapeutics, is it holds the cell out of cycle in the G1 phase, at that checkpoint between G1 and S phase. And what's important about the mechanism of action is that this is a short-acting drug. And so it's just holding the bone marrow progenitors out of cycle at the moment that the chemo is washing by in order to save them from the poison that is chemotherapy.
And now the approval was based on a pooled analysis of 3 studies, right?
That's absolutely right. Trilaciclib has been studied in 242 extensive stage small cell lung cancer patients across 3 randomized phase 2 trials that address most of what we do in extensive stage small cell lung cancer. The first of these trials was the then standard of care, carboplatin and etoposide, either with placebo or with the then experimental agent, trilaciclib. That was a positive study. I'll get into the details in a moment. But while that study was going on, the ground shifted under our feet favorably with the addition of atezolizumab to standard chemotherapy, which is now our modern standard. And so the second study done was carboplatin and etoposide plus atezolizumab, either with or without trilaciclib. And the final study looked at the effects of trilaciclib in a beaten up bone marrow, which is to say later lines of therapy, in this case in combination with topotecan. And the data is actually rather remarkable, both between endpoints and across these studies, as well as in pooled analysis. I'll start with perhaps the most important data set in all of the studies, which is the incidence and duration of neutropenia in cycle 1 with carboplatin, etoposide, and atezolizumab. And I say most important because it's what pretty much every patient gets. Not every patient gets to late line, but every patient, at least in places that can afford a PD-L1 inhibitor, is getting this triplet in frontline at the current time. And here we have a dramatic reduction in grade 4 neutropenia in cycle 1. It's a 96% reduction, going from 49% of patients all the way down to 2%. In terms of duration, we go from a median of 4 days to a median of actually no days. So that's probably the most important endpoint, but I will comment at least briefly on the other endpoints and the other studies, which is to say it was a very similar story here. Similar results in frontline carboetoposide, similar results in topotecan, and also similar results across the pooled analyses. So whether in the pooled analyses, grade 4 neutropenia goes from 53% to 11%, the downstream sequelae of that febrile neutropenia is cut in third from 9.2% to 3.3%, grade 3-4 anemia from 32% to 20%. And what I think is particularly interesting about this data, or particularly convincing about it, is that it makes an insanely clean story in going from mechanism of action to the numeric differences in blood counts to adverse events to supportive care and quality of life. The story really translates very cleanly through. And so here we have I've shared with you some of the numeric data that translates to a reduction in high-grade hematologic events And then when you start to look to quality of life, that story continues to translate quite nicely with notable improvements in quality of life. To me, the most impressive was in fatigue. And again, I care deeply about fatigue because it's what my patients care about, and also because I'm really rather limited in what I can do about it at the current time. And as well, the story is clean in resulting in reduced needs for rescue agents like G-CSF, blood transfusions, and I don't know who's still using it, but ESA administration.
And of course, since trilaciclib is really indicated to reduce chemotherapy-related toxicities, I assume that the goal of the agent is that it doesn't really confer additional adverse effects to patients. So now that it's approved, are there any safety signals with trilaciclib that providers should be aware of?
Normally, when a new agent is approved and we think about using it, we think about, well, how much worse is the toxicity with this new agent added? And here, this is a very different story. The global toxicity profile is superior with the introduction of trilaciclib, not worse. And of course, as you'd expect, this is mostly driven by high-grade hematologic events. The one thing that does happen with trilaciclib that I would highlight are these injection site reactions, including phlebitis. This is something to watch out for because it is real. It happens. All grade, it happened to about 17% of state patients across the studies. And there are things you can do about it. It's very easily manageable. So from my experience with this agent in trials, probably the most useful thing to do is to interrupt and slow the infusion and to flush the line on completion. In rare cases, you can alternate the site. And in really extreme cases, theoretically, if the agent were really helping someone and you had, you know, that extreme case with more trouble, you could consider central access, which many of our patients have anyway, particularly in community settings. One other adverse event that I want to highlight that had interesting data was alopecia. So this study was in no way aimed at preventing alopecia. None of the studies were, but we actually showed a rather dramatic reduction in alopecia. One would reasonably speculate, I think, that the hair follicles were held out of cycle while the chemo was washing by. It won't be anywhere on the label because there was no intent for this, but patients do care about it, and it's a nice little cherry on top.
What are some of the next steps for trilaciclib?
Well, trilaciclib was studied first in small cell lung cancer because it's RB null, pretty much obligate. They're all RB null. And what that means in slightly plainer English is that you wouldn't expect any effect on tumor for better or for worse. For worse, what I mean is you don't have to be worried about trilaciclib antagonizing the chemotherapy. And in fact, we saw that in the PFS and OS data. They were not affected. That effect was preserved, just as you would expect, because they're not dependent on CDK4/6 to cycle through. And then the next study was in triple negative breast cancer, which is also mostly independent of that cell cycle. And I'll leave that discussion to another day because there's no approval for that at this time, as well as because I'm a lung doc. Of course, there's plenty of plans for further study. There are a lot of discussions ongoing, and I hope you'll forgive me, but I'm not sure what if that's public. So in the interest of not getting myself in trouble, I won't comment other than to say, yes, there's a lot of discussion and planned future directions.
And now what about the small cell lung cancer space overall? What are you keeping an eye on as being potentially exciting?
There's actually a lot that's exciting in small cell right now. And I say actually because historically, small cell, along with our good friend pancreatic cancer, was where trials went to die. And it's been very frustrating because in small cell, we often get these complete responses. And you imagine that inside of the patient there, that you've gotten so close to cure and there are few resistant cells there. And I think there was a lot of hope that we would have cured small cell by now, which clearly has not happened. I don't think we have quite hope of curing it in the imminent future, but we do have some exciting advances coming down the pike. In the shortest term, I'm paying attention to imatinib, to liposomal irinotecan, and to enlotinib. I think these are the agents that after trilaciclib probably have the most immediate potential for approvals and improving care. Looking down the road a little more to some more exciting stuff, we've seen some data on Schlufen-11 as a potential biomarker for benefits of PARP inhibition, and I'm interested in learning more about that. In my nerdy small cell world, the TCGA transcription subtypes made a big splash, I think rather appropriately. While it's completely useless for clinical care right now, it shows us biologically distinct subsets that we can target our research towards. And I think this knowledge is actually really important in the long term for reaching therapeutic advances. I had hoped that DLL3 targeting would have resulted in large gains. The failure of Rova-T, an antibody drug conjugate against DLL3, is rather famous. But you know, I had had some hope that alternative strategies like BiTE or CAR-T would have promise. We have data from World Lung looking at AMG-757, which is a BiTE against DLL3. You could view this data as glass half full or glass half empty, depending on your mood. The response rate was 16%. The discontinuation rate was 10%. And so drug is active, but perhaps not as active as some of us had hoped. The CAR-T study, to my knowledge, is on hold. I don't know more about that, but I'm hopeful that it's able to get going again and that there's still some hope there. On that note, I would note, though, that DLL3 is not the only preserved target in small cell. BMS-986012, try saying that three times fast, is a monoclonal antibody against fucosyl GM1, which is expressed in half to three quarters of small cell lung cancer. Again, we have some hot off the press data, which is part of why I'm highlighting it here. We learned at World Lung that the response rate here was 38% with a median duration of response of 26 months. So I would call that legitimately promising. And the final preserved target that I would highlight for you is GD2. Dinutuximab is a not so great drug, in my opinion, against this target. I'm not impressed with the small cell data, but I am aware of attempts to develop cellular therapeutics against GD2, and I'm hopeful that those also provide some nice efficacy and something to look forward to.
What is your take-home message regarding the FDA approval of trilaciclib in small cell lung cancer?
When you think about trilaciclib, or at least when I think about trilaciclib, it's really the opposite of most drugs that we talk about. In most drugs, the study is aimed at improving survival, and the question is at what toxicity cost. This is very much the opposite here. This trilaciclib in small cell was always aimed as to be a quality of life drug, a quality of life preserving drug through myelopreservation. Given how that small cell is obligate RB null, it was never hypothesized that it would affect survival in a good way or a bad way. And the safety signal or absence of safety signal was really all about making sure it didn't harm therapeutic efficacy. And that's really what we've seen here. This drug did improve quality of life. It did not affect PFS or OS. And that's actually reassuring. In the negative, sure, it'd be great for new drugs to improve survival. Of course, it would be great, but we never really hypothesized that here based on mechanism of action, and it's very reassuring that there was no harm to survival or PFS.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science summits and institutional perspectives in cancer webinars. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.